Once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of the second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And today is Saturday, February 15th, the year of our Lord 2014, so it's 2/15/14. I like that.
That kind of sort of makes sense.
It could be 2014/2/15.
Unless you're in Europe and then it's 15/2/14.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a basketball score.
Right.
Or a football score. No, a basketball score would be higher.
I don't know.
You are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach and the numbers. Oh, we are into numbers.
Lots of numbers.
The numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We could say that the Personal Wealth Coach is brought to you today by the numbers 773-1400. Anyway, we are the Personal Wealth Coach, and we are both a radio program, and we also are folks who make a lot of decisions with other people's money at an investment advisory firm.
Their own money, too.
In Salado, Texas, in case you're listening from somewhere else. As I said at the end of the last hour, we had a good week in the market. The market is, depending on what you mean by the market, the stock market, the S&P 500 is very near to a recovery point for its high.
Wait, if we're going to do a headline like they do when the market's down, where they say, market down more than any month since 2 months ago, then we should do the same thing for this. Market up more than any week except for...
I got this one.
Months ago.
Since the stock market was up over 2% last week.
Uh-huh.
Market rises at annual rate of 100%.
Yeah, see that?
Yeah, but they have articles like that, you know?
This is the problem with media math. Media math is not good math. When they try to make a headline about how bad something is, they have to dig back at least...
Well, you know...
Weeks ago, and when they don't worry about math on the upside because that doesn't sell newspapers.
You know, it's an interesting thing. I mentioned earlier that if we're going to talk to my father, we need a medium.
Yeah,
we have multiple mediums because that's media.
Media, yes. There are media outlets everywhere. You just need to stop by one and talk to your father.
Yeah, that would be cool. The only problem with the fellow who said that people just need to listen to their father. Most fathers are not very astute in the area of finance.
Right. Learning mathematics is important if you learn the right mathematics. If you learn about compound interest, if you learn about the math that's going to impact your life, I suppose the math of physics actually would literally impact your life if you're talking about the momentum of a dump truck. But economic math is quite important and is going to be useful for almost anyone.
There's a couple of points out there that are... very important that came out in various Barron's articles today. Well, there's a lot of them. I like Barron's. The cover article in Barron's Weekly, which is a Dow Jones publication, was written by Gene Epstein. And I like him. And normally he writes a column, and I was looking vigorously for his column, and I couldn't find it. Turns out he has the cover article.
Oh, well, that explains it.
And he said this, the case for 4% growth. There are some serious economists out there who do investing at the same time, and those are my favorite kind, because they're not just going around making theories that, sorry, I was wrong, and it doesn't affect
practical.
Them financially. But the article, if you have an opportunity to get Barron's, very clearly points out that there is a very, very good argument that the GDP growth that we saw in the fourth quarter of last year, around 4%, is not an anomaly. That we will see potentially a growth rate of 4%, GDP growth rate of 4% this year and moving forward in the midterm. If that happens, and again, I see some very, very good evidence that that may be exactly what happens, several things will occur very quickly that will make some people very unhappy.
Oh, no.
Jobless rates will fall. Interest rates will rise quicker than anticipated.
Who is this going to make unhappy?
All the people who want the economy to do poorly.
Right. Well, if you make your living complaining... and there are a lot of people that make their living complaining,
500 and some in Congress alone,
right, then this is not good news.
And but it gets worse. If we have that kind of growth, and again, the argument in there, and I'm not going to try to recite all the economics in there, it was a little bit mind-boggling even to me, the size of words they were using. Suffice to say that the argument is a solid one. If it comes to pass, and there are, like I said, I'm more and more inclined to think it will, you will also see the deficit drop dramatically. You will see the national debt in real terms begin to decline within the next 2 years. And the economy will look good. The debt situation will improve dramatically without budget cuts. And this will make some people very, very unhappy. And note who it makes unhappy. Note who fights it. Note who objects to it. And whoever objects to an improving economy, an improving employment rate, and a reduced deficit, whoever hollers the loudest and says this is fake, this is wrong, are the people who want to push their agenda more than they want the country to do well. And I don't know, I'm not going to suggest who's going to do it. Just keep your eyes open. More to follow. This is, among other things, it was the economics geek who is sitting here behind the green foam ball speaking to it.
Which one of us?
Sort of matches my shirt a little bit here.
We've got two economics geeks sitting behind.
Yeah, but you're sitting behind
foam.
The yellow foam
ball. I have a
ball.
Yellow one. You have a green one.
Yes.
Okay.
This is Jeff over here. This fascinating thing to me, China reported double-digit growth last month in both exports and imports. Now, I want to say that again. China reported double-digit growth in both exports and imports last month. Now, okay, well, big deal. What does that mean? There was a consensus that the Chinese economy was slowing, and, you know, it dropped to 6% growth instead of 8 or 9% growth, and that in economic terms, apparently, at least in media terms, is slowing. Something that's growing that fast considered to be slowing down, I don't completely get. But at any rate, the idea is that it apparently isn't. Now, if just the exports from China were unusually high, I would question that, because what's been happening, by the way, is people who do the exports are reporting higher dollar value going out so they can import more dollars into the country legally,
right?
Because they don't trust the local Chinese currency. They trust trust dollars far more. Again, that makes some people unhappy. But when you see the imports, when the money is coming, when you've got no money, when you've got things being paid for that come into the country that rise at about the same rate, this is an indication of a whole series of things going on around the globe. What this says is somebody is buying a tremendous amount of goods and services from China. And it rose at over 10% last month. More, China is buying materials from outside of China, imports, goods, including finished goods, at a much higher rate than anyone thought before that I could find. This says that the economic recovery is working. It's happening. It's happening around the world. By the way, the sell-off in the diversified emerging markets, which is an area we follow, has been largely because people looked at the economic reports on China and said China is slowing down. China buys a lot of stuff from these countries. Therefore, we ought to sell the stock of the companies that are in those countries, which if you listen to what I just said, China just increased its imports in 1 month by 10%.
Yes.
That's pretty earth-shaking. That's just 1 month. I also think that there seems to be some sanity seeping in from the edges, because we got a manufacturer's report that it dropped in 1 month in January, 0.8% manufacturing in the United States, which is unusually high. I mean, that was a big drop. But the point is, somebody on the stock exchange noticed that it snowed.
Oh, yes. Yes, there was white stuff on the ground.
And this affects the ability. And of course, sales were the same thing across the country. We saw sales of automobiles drop off. And lo and behold, when there is several feet of snow,
it's really
on
hard
the car
to
lot,
get out there and look at what the car looks like underneath all that white stuff.
And as a result, nobody panicked. And matter of fact, the market rose with all the negative domestic economic news. And it rose very nicely, which, up 2% last week. What does all this boil down to? What it all boils down to is that this dip we saw at the beginning of the year was what we said it was. It was de-risking. In other words, the hedge funds mainly, as well as some other, as well as some pension funds, have reduced their bond holdings and increased their, they reduced their stock holdings, which isn't really brilliant in my opinion at this point. But they did so at the beginning of the year because they concluded the stock market was now approaching fair market value, and they began to move out of stocks, which...
You combine that with the fact that people needed to pay taxes on money that they'd earned during the last year, which are slightly higher than they were before. We had a sell-off in January. It's exactly what we said it was. Kind of scary that we keep saying things like that. I don't want to develop hubris ourselves in that we look at these things, and most of the time if we talk about them, we've been getting them right. And that's a little scary to me because it's giving me confidence, and I don't like having confidence about the market. I'd much rather not trust my own instinct but actually bring data to it, and I'm afraid that I'm going to start saying my instinct is right all the time.
But there's other indicators out there that if you don't follow the economic news as geekily as we do, I should say carefully, but I don't know if we're very careful.
No,
we're
very geeky.
We're very geekily about it. With about 80 and 90% of the S&P 500 now reporting, having reported on fourth quarter earnings, on an annualized basis, their earnings are growing at 9.4%.
Now, I'm going to say some things here that sound on the surface to be absolutely irrelevant to earnings growth or GDP growth. You have something you want to say before I do?
Before I do that, I want to add one little tagline on there.
Uh-huh.
I want you to notice something here. We're talking about China growing so fast. We're talking about the Chinese going to overtake the world. Listen to what I said about corporate earnings in the fourth quarter, 9.4%. That, folks, is a lot faster than China's GDP growth. That's all I got to say.
Yeah.
Yes.
A lot faster.
Yes.
Well, it sounds like 4% is less than 7 to 10%. If you look at the overall size, we are still very much outpacing the Chinese.
Yeah. If you're making $1,000 and your wages go up by 4%, it went up by $40.
If you're making $100 and it goes up by 7, it went up by $7.
Theirs is closer to if you're making $500.
Right.
Let's just say you're making $500 and you go up by 6%.
You got three extra dollars.
You had $30. $30, whereas the
$30, yes.
The organization over here, the one that's making $1,000 rose by less in percentage terms. But actually, the dollar value of the wages of the larger earner, even though it went up a smaller percentage,
it's still growing faster.
It's still growing faster than the other one.
The other one won't catch up at that rate.
Right.
The two things I was going to talk about very quickly. We have grown a human lung in the lab for the first time. It's going to be years before it can be tested in humans, but the reality exists of the ability to grow organs. We've already been working with livers and kidneys, tracheas, esophagus, ears, noses.
Throats?
Throat. Well, tracheas and esophagus. So.
Oh, okay. Well, ear, nose, and throat.
Yeah. So the lung has been grown. Now, it's probably not sufficient to use as a lung yet, but the fact is that we were able to grow one in the lab in the United States. Second to that, there are three major organizations doing research into fusion as a method of producing energy. Did you catch this?
Yes,
follow
yes,
what
I got
I'm
you.
About to say?
I'm waiting for net gain in fusion.
We had a net gain in fusion in the United States for the first time. It wasn't sustained.
Really? Okay.
It didn't hit sustained reaction, but it produced more energy than was put into it. They used lasers, and they used a very complicated algorithm to make sure that the lasers were applying equal force in a spherical form all the way around, and they fused two pieces of hydrogen, deuterium and neutrinium, together,
yeah, right.
And they produced more energy than what went into it. Now, this happened at less than a thousandth of a second. It didn't reach sustained reaction, but this is the clearest sign that we're on the right track. Nobody else anywhere else in all of the experiments that have been done has ever been able to produce more energy than what was put into it. That may sound like I'm talking about technobabble here.
No, it's esoteric.
Esoteric technobabble. Yes. How's that? But the reality is that if we can figure this thing out, forget about the Middle East, forget about fracking. This is something that will change the scope and scale of all things power-oriented.
If I could change the subject for a moment.
Oh, absolutely not. We're only going to stay on the same subject.
We got a call about our comments about annuities. And I don't know how many of you read or see or whatever the Wall Street Journal, but there is, in the weekend Wall Street Journal, The Intelligent Investor by Jason Zweig. I don't always agree with him, but I'm certainly going to go with him today. He has a very, very, very good article, at least in the online Wall Street Journal now, Who's Training Your Retirement Navigator? I can't tell you how much I appreciate that article. He points out that CPAs, brokers, insurance agents, or whatever, are going to a school where they are taught how to manage withdrawals from 401ks. And you think, well, that's really impressive.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Until you realize that they don't pay to go to the school. Instead, they say they pay a percentage of what they sell to the people who run the school. Now, you couldn't do that with securities, so what they're doing it with is with
insurance.
With insurance annuities. Whether it be an indexed or a fixed, index is a form of fixed annuity. They are not securities, they're not regulated by the SEC. And we talked about last week that we consider those to be an extremely dangerous long-term investment. And I want to emphasize they are extremely dangerous long-term investments, and I'll be glad to back that up any way you want to approach it.
Yes.
You're basically, these guys are encouraging people to roll over their 401ks into guaranteed annuities. The problem is that there is no federal agency or insurance company backing. There is no insurance on the insurance company. If the insurance company goes down, your money will go down too. And the second issue, and this is big, this is pure economics. They pay high commissions.
Very high commissions.
Anywhere from 3 to 8%.
Sometimes, according to the SEC's website, the highest commission payable on a fixed indexed annuity that they have been able to find at the SEC is a 15% commission.
And if you take 15% of your money and you give it to the salesman,
mm-hmm.
the company that's selling it hopes to make a significant profit. You stretch it out over the number of years and you look at the amount of money that's coming out of those things, which is in excess of typically 3% a year goes to the company, 15% goes to the salesperson. Plus, by the way, the salesperson gets a trailing commission every year you keep it of anywhere from 0.25% to 1%. You add all those numbers up, and you get a pretty good rate of return. The problem is that the pretty good rate of return all accrues to the people who sell it.
not
and
to
the people who manufacture it. The point is, there is to promise someone who is going to be drawing that money out to live on any reasonable rate of return, the insurance company is going to have to invest in the market in an extremely risky fashion. And it is didn't going to, you just can't pull that much money out of your retirement, give it to the salesperson, give it to the insurance company, and have any decent amount left over for you.
Well, we were talking earlier about learning financial math. This is a good one to get started. If you've been presented one of these annuities, first, actually read it, because these illustrations for the annuities have on the first two pages all of the disclaimers that we're talking about. They are written in there, and sometimes they're written in bold letters. Quickly, the insurance agent or whoever is providing this to you will flip past those pages. They may outline some semi-irrelevant part on there, but if you read the fact, you know, I'm going to start with the one with the most bells and whistles, these equity-indexed annuities. They've got things on there called cap rates. They've got things on there called spreads. Those generally can, not only can, but will change with each year that you hold the contract. So whatever you start with is likely to change, and they have a guarantee that they won't drop it below a certain amount. Well, we talked about last week about Allianz. Allianz says that they will not drop that cap rate below 0.25%. And what they've just said is if the market goes up, you get 0.25%. If the market goes up 12%, you have a guarantee of a quarter of a percent. If you look, this is the best and easiest way of figuring out what these annuities actually do. Go to the guaranteed page, not the one that's marking some movements on the index based on the best possible things that they may not, probably will not pay you. Go to the guaranteed page, what they are required by insurance law to pay you. And you will find, and I just verified this multiple times with different people, what you'll find is they're guaranteed to pay you less than a non-index based fixed annuity.
Oh, that's why, by the way, I took an entire very painful course, because it was mind-boggling, in variable, or not in indexed annuities, and without exception, the companies that are issuing them say they're more profitable to the company than the standard fixed annuity.
Right.
But they carry, if anything, more risk. Now, here's the other side of that. The person who called in wanted us to explain why we said variable annuities. This doesn't apply to variable annuities. Variable annuities, in many cases, carry a lot of expenses.
Sometimes there's a lot of risk associated with them.
And they offer a lot of guarantees. That's where the expenses pile up. The guarantees in a variable annuity are like those fixed annuities and in index annuities we were talking about. They're only as good as the company.
Right. So that's dangerous.
But there's a plus over there. And there are very, very low-cost variable annuities, by the way. They are tax deferrals. That, if you avoid the guarantees and you look purely at a very, very low-cost variable annuity, and some of them are extremely low-cost.
A lot of them are extremely high-cost, so be careful
right.
there.
The internal funds within the variable annuity are protected by the Investment Company Act of 1940. Now, not the fixed rate account in there, but all the mutual funds in there are protected by the Investment Company Act of 1940 so that if the insurance company fails, your money doesn't go with it.
You can still have the risk of the market in there. You
right.
see that up and down movement in those funds.
Well, the risk of the market is also in a fixed annuity. You just don't see
right.
it. Right.
In fact, you have the risk of the company. The one stock, mm-hmm. one company's stock in the market is the risk that you're taking.
Yeah. In essence, you are loaning money to a single company when you get a fixed or indexed annuity. Your future security is exactly as secure as that company is. And I've talked to a lot of people, and I said, would you buy a derivative issued by a single company?
And spend a lot of your income in it.
A big chunk of your total retirement in a single derivative issued by a single corporation.
In the event of bankruptcy, you get behind the bondholders.
Yeah.
You get behind everybody.
So the point and they said, well, of course not. Well, let me hate to break this to folks. Fixed and indexed annuities are derivatives.
They are. And if you, this is great. Go to the SEC's website. You can look this up. The SEC clearly says,
www.sec.gov.
It clearly says, if you just do a search on that page for indexed annuity, and it says this very clearly, it's a very simple statement. The risk that you're taking in these annuities is the risk of buying that company. You are taking the guarantee is only as good as the company giving the guarantee. We say it. We think it's important. This, if you do the math on this, if you're loaning money to a company, and this is something we talked about this months ago, we'll probably talk about it again in months. If you have a stable value fund in your portfolio, somewhere in your portfolio, those are insurance derivatives that you're buying back and forth. And they're a form of insurance on the guarantees that these insurance companies have on their annuities. At least, you're well ahead of the annuity holder in the bankruptcy proceedings. I still think it's dangerous.
Let me quote from the article in the Wall Street Journal here. The fellow who runs this school that they talk about in there, and by the way, they have organizations out there of the students called America's Tax Solutions, and they are accountants. He estimates that about 7,200 accountants have received training from what's called Table Bay. That's the school. And this is interesting. They send Table Bay, then sends flyers to these accountants. And the flyer says they have an indexed annuity that they want them to offer, paying a 9% commission. They would convert, they were going to have education that would convert, they're talking about you, shoppers and plate lickers into customers, producing huge, it's all caps, commissions. And they promise the top producers who sell these, the top producer will get a new Maserati.
Oh, well, that's kind of nice.
And this is the weirdest part. Now, I don't know how widespread this is, but we've had reports that these people who are selling these annuities, who are accountants and insurance agents, are claiming to be fiduciaries.
Not just accounts. We've got accounts of this from now three different people from different insurance agencies and tax preparation firms. I think it's important that we go back over the definition of what a fiduciary is. We talk about this regularly. I had to say this. A fiduciary is very clearly someone who's going to tell you exactly how they're compensated. That isn't how much you're paying them, but how much they're being compensated from the transaction. So if they say, you're not paying me anything, it's coming from the company, that's not a fiduciary. The fiduciary will have to say, this is how much I'm getting paid from this transaction.
And the guy who is pushing these these indexed annuities, and his name is spelled Bulakites, according to the Wall Street Journal article,
has this Bulkites?
B-U-L-A, Bulakites, I don't
Bulakites.
Know how to, whatever that his name is, he says that he's an innovator on his website in the exploding retirement marketplace. He's training accountants and insurance agents how to do this. However, in his biography, he doesn't mention a settlement with the Department of Labor in which he consented to be permanently barred from serving as a fiduciary to a retirement plan. And I'm trying to tell you, there are people out there who will capitalize on your fear of market variance or volatility, as it's sometimes called, by selling you something that is inherently extremely dangerous.
You just don't see it.
I frankly think, and I don't have any way of telling the future, I just think that the signs are there. The indexed annuity is the collateralized mortgage obligation of the future.
Yeah.
It is the thing that is being sold in the trillions of dollars across the country. It is the thing that people are buying. that when I look at the numbers on them, it is not possible for them to perform the way they are advertised. It is simply not physically possible for them to do so.
We're hearing about it at a very high rate right now. It is out there, and it's out there in droves. They're going to churches. They're going to business groups, and they're doing these seminars. So go in there. You might actually learn something if you go to one of these things, but be aware, be very aware.
I wouldn't go.
That the financial industry regulatory authority, those that that's the group
they don't
that,
even regulate those.
That regulates the securities industry, has come down very hard against them and said that if a broker dealer is advocating the use of these, they're going to get audited. And the SEC has not only come down against them, sued against them. The SEC has a rule called 151A, saying the only reason we're not regulating these things is because the insurance industry lobbied Congress and said, don't do it.
And so that's where they are. We have a caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. I may have called you too late.
Okay.
Let me give you an example here that you could probably give me advice on. I've got a 63-year-old wife looking to get it, or look, already gotten a 10-year annuity so that at 73, and she should have about a 30-year lifespan being 63 now, with a 10-year annuity that she can start drawing a lifetime income at 73. Now, I put $130,000 in. At the end of the 10-year period, it's supposed to have a value of about $268,000. And she'll be drawing a monthly benefit for the rest of her life at $1,100 a month. Now, is that a good deal or not?
Well, I'd have to run the numbers on it, but I can tell you what you probably got, and I don't know.
It's a fixed indexed annuity.
Okay, but here's
from a fiduciary.
Right here,
not from a fiduciary.
Absolutely not. That's a high. If it is an indexed annuity, it is a very high commission by definition.
Let me hit that point here, and this is extremely important. I tried to. It is not illegal for an insurance agent to claim to be a fiduciary.
No. This is a professional. I mean, a retirement specialist, and they do have their ADV or whatever that is. Disclosure that they are a fiduciary.
ADV?
Right.
I sincerely doubt that.
I've got it in writing. I've got the printed sheet here stating such.
Does it say that they sell for commissions?
Well, I don't know if it says that specific words. I don't have the form.
The point is that here's one of the things that really drives me nuts. A person can function as an investment advisor, give you the form ADV, but if they're duly registered, they can stop being an investment advisor in a heartbeat without telling you and become a salesman at the next sentence with absolutely no fiduciary intent, with the intent of gaining maximum profit for themselves.
And unless they told you what they were getting paid out of it.
Did you get the dollar amount that person was going to get paid?
No, I've not got the dollar amount.
Then he was not functioning as a fiduciary.
He may claim to be a fiduciary, but if he actually claimed to be a fiduciary and then sold an equity indexed annuity to you,
you can get your money back.
You can actually talk to an attorney about that one. If he gave you an ADV and claimed to be a fiduciary and then sold you an equity indexed fixed annuity, you've got a legal case.
Yeah. And
you've got a very nice legal case.
Look, I want out. It probably has a huge surrender charge on it right now, right?
Correct.
That means, look, whatever this will say, it's a 15% surrender charge, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Which means that what
that's generally what the commission was.
Let me tell you, that was the commission. That's how much somebody got paid to sell you that.
So if you put in $130,000.
Wow.
And in 10 years, it's supposed to have a value of $268,000.
Well, they got paid $19,000 out of it.
But now if you take a look at that supposed to, you'll probably find it has lots of caveats on it.
If it keeps the same cap rate, which you'll find can be changed.
There's probably a stack of ifs. The other, what you got also is, there's an interesting piece of that value that you just got told about.
This is number four with the fiduciary thing.
You only get the value if you don't liquidate it.
Correct.
What that means is,
just to just make sure my wife is taken care of, if I leave it for the 10 years, whether I'm here or not 10 years now, she should draw $1,100 a month for the rest of her life.
But
is
this
that
is
a bad deal.
When this is the point, you invested $130,000 with the promise, which probably has lots of caveats on it that says we don't have to keep this promise, that 10 years from now, you loan them, would you loan somebody $130,000 based on a promise that they can renege on that says they will pay you $1,100 in 10 years?
A month.
In 10 years. Would you loan that money to...
an individual, but with some of a professional.
No, professional. You didn't loan it.
You didn't loan it to the professional. You loaned it to a company.
What was the company that sold this annuity?
American Equities.
Okay. If you look up American Equity and figure out who owns it, it's got a stock price. Somebody that's a stock company probably owns it, okay?
Well, it's an A-rated company, and it's domiciled in Texas.
Okay.
It has the $250,000...
$250,000 what?
The association that insures these insurance companies. Now, if the whole
let me back up. There is no insurance. It's an association. It's called a guarantee association, but there's no insurance policy on it.
How did you hear about this association? Did the person telling you? Was the person that sold it to you?
They mentioned it also, but I've heard of it before.
Okay. So they mentioned it to you. They told you about it.
All the insurance companies in Texas pay into this, and if a company goes under, then they basically pay what you've lost up to $250,000.
This is the point. First off, the person violated insurance law in the state of Texas if he told you about it.
Yeah. He's not allowed to use that as a marketing tool at all. That is something, and this is very clear in every ethical guideline. Every 2 years for his license, he's got to take 2 hours of of ethics. And in that ethics course, they will tell him again and again and again that he's not allowed to talk about the association that backs these things.
And let me explain why.
Now, I want to clarify that they did not mention it. I asked about if this was guaranteed in any way, and then it was mentioned, but they did not.
That
advice to begin with.
That association is the same type of association that backed the banking system until the FDIC came into existence.
So the 1920s and 30s.
And we lost the majority of banks in the United States in the 1930s because those associations didn't work. Once something gets big enough, those associations don't work. Had AIG failed, the President Bush and Secretary Paulson not chosen to purchase AIG using TARP money, which was not designated for that purpose, but they weren't forbidden to do it, then every major – one of their arguments that was made for them to go in and purchase AIG is literally every insurance association in the United States will fail if you don't purchase AIG. And so there's a host of issues here.
Let me
finish this
out. Okay.
The bottom line to it is you have a company, and when you say it was an A-rated company, Mid-Continent Life of Oklahoma was actually an A-plus rated company by AM Best 30 days before it became insolvent. And the ratings by AM Best, by the way, do you know who pays AM Best for the ratings?
The insurance companies, I imagine.
The insurance company pays AM Best to give it a rating, which was, by the way, the critique made on why we had a collateralized mortgage obligation collapse in the United States, is the companies that were putting the CMOs together were paying the rating companies to inspect the CMOs, and that was their number one source of revenue. Well, guess what the number one source of revenue of AM Best is?
There's a couple of things to say here. First, we've been doing this program since 1998 together, since 1997 in total. To the best of my knowledge, we have never come down so strongly against a single financial product. Generally, we can find good reasons for a product to exist, even if they're expensive, even if they have guarantees that may not be met. An equity-indexed fixed annuity is something that there may be somewhere, someone whose best interest is served by it, but I haven't found it yet. That is a strong statement. You probably heard us, if you've listened to us for very long, we don't make extreme statements very often. This is one of those that I don't have any trouble making an extreme statement about. If you haven't had this for more than 30 days, then you have you get a free look period for a 30-day window. But if they did give you an ADV, I will be happy to talk to you and go over it with you if you'd like. If you want to give the office a call, we don't try to sell people stuff.
We don't sell stuff.
This is an area that is impacting the public right now in a way that I can't even describe. It is the number of people that are claiming to be fiduciaries, which if they're an insurance agent and they make that claim, it's not illegal. It's still a lie, but it's not illegal. If they're in the securities world,
insurance company, I'm dealing with.
Okay, if they're in the securities world, it's illegal to make that claim without being it. In the insurance world, your neighbor could walk up to you and say, "Hey, I'm going to be your fiduciary." That's not illegal. The insurance world falls in that category. Your neighbor saying, "I'm a fiduciary." So recognize that, and recognize that both of us have insurance licenses. We have these licenses not to sell insurance, but because there are states in the United States that require us to have the license so that we can give advice as to whether or not a piece of insurance that someone holds is ethical or not. So we don't sell insurance, but we're both licensed for it. We take the same continuing education. We look at it from the perspective of a fiduciary. And the reality is that if they're not telling you how much they get paid, if they're not disclosing all conflicts of interest, then they're not a fiduciary, legally speaking.
Okay. Let me expound on that a little bit then. I don't care what they're getting paid. If what the final product serves what I want done, if 10 years from now and I'm dead and my wife is still alive and she can suddenly start drawing after 10 years, $1,100 a month for the next 20, 25, or 30 years of her life, is that such a bad deal?
Not necessarily, but let me answer that real quick. If you went to get a mortgage, if you're refinancing a house, and you had two options, one has $14,000 of closing costs, and one has $2,000 of closing costs. Now, the payment is going to be the same on both of these. One of them has a lower interest, and one of them has a higher interest, so the payment's the same. You're absolutely correct. If the payment's the same, it's all good. The problem is the payment's not the same. That's the point. You're not getting the best deal. You're paying a lot for something that is not the best deal. And we can discuss that at great length, and I have no reticence about saying this on the air, which we're very careful about that sort of thing. If you look at the guaranteed payments, you're likely to be guaranteed less than 1% a year. That's your guaranteed payment on the, you know, you said we're supposed to have 200 and some on 1,000 in 10 years. But if you look at the guaranteed amount and you also look at what do I get if I liquidate, what is the guaranteed number? Because you're buying a guarantee here. You're not buying the promise of maybe something that could be added on top of that. Look at the guarantees. Because that's what the extra commission comes from. And the guarantees say they only need to pay you X amount of dollars. You've got that in written form somewhere. Look at that guaranteed amount, and that's what you're paying
okay,
for.
Okay, I just ran some numbers on what you just told me. If your wife lives for 30 years after she starts drawing that money, they have just promised her and you a 9.6% average annual rate of return over the life of that product. And I can tell you that the Texas Teachers Retirement System are some of the most astute investors in the nation. They have phenomenally low costs. They have an expected return of 8%. Now, if I turn around and pay if I turn around and take the commissions out of the money you gave them, so that the $130,000 is reduced by even 10%, mm-hmm. the rate of return they've just promised you and your wife is well over 10% a year. And frankly, that's what I said earlier, I've looked at these numbers. They certainly remind me tremendously of what I saw in the collateralized mortgage obligations, where they say no risk, super high return. Well, a guy named Harry Markowitz wrote a paper in 1952, and he says that's not possible. And since then, it has been the experiment has been repeated. We've looked at 60-some years of history and results. It is not possible to give somebody to guarantee a 10% rate of return over an extended period of time and make it work.
And the final part here, really quickly, if I had asked you 10 years ago, what's the likelihood of General Motors going bankrupt in the next 6 years, what do you think you would have said?
Well, I would have said no.
And it did.
But
no matter how
equities goes under, isn't the account is covered up to $250,000.
It's not.
I realize that's not a state agency. The whole industry isn't going to collapse where that association cannot pay for that one company that went under.
That company will pay you and your wife back $130,000 if it's the only company issuing index annuities that goes under that they have to cover. Now, if you've got lots and lots and lots of companies issuing equity indexed annuities in Texas, and we get a crisis like the collateralized mortgage obligation crisis that we just saw in 2008 and 2009,
they won't be able to cover it. And even if it is the only one that goes down, which is an extreme, you know, we don't know that an insurance company is going to go down, but if it is, it's typically longer than 18 months before that association pays anything.
Yeah,
and generally it doesn't pay the full amount.
Let me put it this way. Executive Life of California.
Crude amount of the account.
No, an Executive Life of California became insolvent 20 years before it was liquidated. When it was liquidated, if you were still living in the state that where the policy was issued, and if the issuing state and the state of domicile both had agreements, then indeed you got coverage for money that you paid in
at the beginning,
net money minus anything they had sent you that you had paid in 20 years ago.
So if you put in $130,000 and in 10 years she starts pulling money out and 10 years later it fails, 20 years is a long time for any company. What you're doing is you're betting all of that money that that company is going to exist 20 years and 30 years and 40 years down the road to continue to pay her.
Well, I know
that's a lot of risk.
It's supposed to grow from 130 to 268. Now, I talked to the association, and they told me that whatever the value is at the time, say 9 years from now, it's at $250,000, they will pay up to $250,000 on that account. It's not what I put in initially. It's what it's valued at the time of insolvency that the company collapsed.
Well,
if that's 10 years from now and it's worth $250,000 or $268,000, they'll pay up to $250,000. That's what the association told me.
And I don't question that the association told you that, and I also don't question that they said $268,000. I strongly suspect if you look at the fine print that $268,000 is not either guaranteed or even promised. It is a projection of a best case return.
If you look at the guaranteed numbers, it isn't the
and all that the state
that you're mentioning.
And all the state will pay is the guaranteed number. And if it's like every other fixed index, any every other index annuity I've ever seen, the guaranteed number is $130,000.
And in the first 10 years it's 87.5%.
The worst case or best case scenario, however you want to look at it, then is at least under this association, I would get the money.
No, No, because the point is, this is systemic across the state. This is being done by lots of companies. If they all fail at once because of exactly the same thing, what happens?
Well, yeah, but I mean, all insurance companies are not going to fail.
Let me tell you, if AIG had not been rescued, they would have. All the major insurance companies in the United States would have failed simultaneously.
It would have been just like the savings and loans in the 90s. It would have been just like the banks in the 30s.
Nobody thought when Lehman Brothers went down that it was going to take down Merrill Lynch, did they?
Well, no, but then, you know, I'm all for getting the government out of our lives more than, you know, as much as we can.
Right.
But I think it's a government, like you just said, is what saved the insurance company, and I think the government in the future has enough.
It's now illegal to do what President Bush and the Secretary of Treasury did. The Congress has made it illegal.
We've got to play some commercials.
They're not going to let the insurance company or insurance industry collapse, just like they're not going to let the car industry collapse.
Ask the bondholders of Fannie and Freddie.
We've got to play commercials. We're almost out of time.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Appreciate the call. If you want to continue this off the air, you can give us a call. Our numbers at the office are, right now it's voicemail, 1-800-914-7526 or 947-1111. You can email us at Jeff@tpwc.com or Jake@tpwc.com.
And we promise we won't sell anything because we can't.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
I need to protect my company's email.